This is a Clearview podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's episode of Carpe Manana, the show where we talk about how to capture tomorrow today. From leadership strategies to ministry tips and everything in between, our whole goal is that you have the tools you need to capture the hearts and the minds of the next generation. We want to start this episode off the same way we do each week, introducing ourselves and letting you know what we do here at Clearview so you can know who's participating in the conversation. So to my right is
Abidan Shaw, and I'm in charge of preaching and leadership here at Clearview Church. And to my right,
I'm Kelsey McKeel, and I'm in charge of kids ministry and theater here at Clearview Church. And to my right,
my name is Rebecca Shaw, and I'm in charge of kids ministry and administration here at Clearview. And to my right,
John Galantis, I'm in charge of worship and media here at Clearview Church. And to my right,
David Williamson, I'm in charge of student worship and technology here at Clearview. And to my right,
Ryan Hill, and I'm in charge of congregational care and student ministry here at Clearview. And guys, at the time of this recording, we're all sitting around the room here, and I gotta tell you guys, I'm missing a very different landscape, a very different set of scenery. We just got back from our annual staff retreat, and this year we went to Arizona.
Yes.
It was a wonderful trip. I mean, we don't say this lightly. It was once in a lifetime trip. It was amazing.
First time out west. I've never been out west. Yeah. I've never been off the East Coast other than going to Israel, but I've never been out west before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy.
That was insane.
Unbelievable. And Dr. Shaw, thank you so much for making this trip and every staff retreat a priority.
Definitely.
Giving us opportunities to not only see things that we don't normally see, but to grow closer together and bond with one another and just have incredible opportunities for the kids and for the rest of our families. Thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Nicole and I have been doing this with you guys for the past, I would say, 4 or 5 years, mm-hmm. maybe. And it started out being just a day or two, and then we made it longer and longer. And this time, instead of just going to the beach or to the Outer Banks, which is beautiful, we typically go just to the ocean, and we're so blessed to be living so close to mm-hmm. the beach. But this time we felt like we need to have a radical change in scenery. And boy, it was radically changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We went all the way to Arizona. And Nicole and I have been there. I love the Old West. So I've been out there. Twice, once with just Nicole and I went for a convention with Southern Baptist, and second time with our whole family, we took an out west trip in 2009 and had a great time, saw the Grand Canyon, saw Monument Valley, all that. And we felt like it's going to really benefit our team and their families if we go out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we prayed about it. Talk to our leadership, our finance committee, and everything, because it's a big undertaking. And it was a go.
Mm.
And Nicole, my wife, she spent hours and hours and hours of trying to find the most ideal spot for us to go and stay and then to go different places. Mm-hmm. It wasn't easy, but she did it. Mm-hmm. I have to give it to her. She did it.
She does it every time.
And you could really tell the hard work came through, because the spot was, it was like a perfect location right there. And also, it was a historic site, which was something that was kind of cool.
You want to talk about how we didn't even realize where we were staying?
Yes, we were staying at the foothills of Mount Eldon.
Yeah.
That early morning, Monday morning, we decided to go for a walk. And literally 50 yards behind the back porch was this trail.
Yeah.
And behind the trail is this huge mountain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we got on the trail.
It was crazy, because like what you were saying, there's like a trail that's behind there. It's like an ATV trail almost, where maybe a car, or mostly it should be four-wheelers, are driving. And then there was another offshoot trail that you, Dr. Shaw, you were like, let's go down there. Let's see what's down there. Before
No signs, by the way.
Yeah, just
no
going.
Signs. It was just like an opening. Mm-hmm. So we're like, okay, we shoot down there. And as we're rounding this corner, you see like a big sign.
Yes.
And on the sign it said, I can't remember exactly what it was.
Yeah, it talked about a couple that moved there, mm-hmm. came there after the Civil War, okay? So you know, we're going back to late 1860s, I think, or 1871 or something like mm-hmm. that, I think. And they moved there to start a family, to start life.
Yeah.
And you know, John Eldon, that's his name. And he and his wife moved there, and there was a creek that ran at the foothills or the foot of the mountain, you know, coming down from the rocks. And they used that as their as a sign that this is where they were supposed to be.
Yeah.
Wow. And you could still see the signs where the house was, mm-hmm. like a log cabin, and they raised sheep or goats, I think yeah. something like that,
yeah.
on the mountainside. And it was unbelievable.
Yeah,
it was there beautiful. Was even a grave there and things like that of, you know, one of the babies died. Mm-hmm. So
I'm reading something that says that Mount Eldon is a prominent volcanic dome.
Yeah.
Oh, so it was a volcano too.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Wow. Okay. Yep. That's I did not know cool. that. So we it was at one point a volcano.
Yep.
That's kind of cool. I was thinking the water got insanely hot in the shower. I was
like, the showers were very
I didn't realize.
Yeah, the showers were great. It was so not hot. True.
Yeah. It was.
But I mean, when we came back from that little excursion, you know, I decided to sit down and just Google it, and I was surprised because it was everywhere.
Yep.
Mount Eldon, yeah. Pioneers, First Family in Flagstaff. You know, this is what they know. And the grave was of their little boy, mm-hmm. and people come from all over. There was like a myth behind it, and back in 2017, a PhD historian actually debunked it.
Hmm.
And so, I mean, there's a lot... I was happening. Yeah. Didn't realize. Yeah. Barely, maybe 200 yards from our mm-hmm. our
it
cabin.
Was so close, mm-hmm.
yeah. right? Literally close. In the backyard.
Yeah,
I remember.
Advertise that.
I remember when you guys left for the hike. I was there taking care of the kids, and you came back, and you were like, "Peter, you like, do you know where we are? Do you understand where we're staying?" And I was like, "I mean, we're in the house. Like, I don't." But mm-hmm. then you pulled it up, like the web page yep. with the information, and yep. it was exactly what we saw out of the back window. It is crazy yeah. to think yeah. that we were sitting literally on history.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a beautiful mm-hmm. site that Nicole picked out, but we didn't realize the significance of the mm-hmm. place.
Yeah, it was really cool.
So it was exciting.
And then on top of the significance of it, exactly where it was so close to everything that we wanted to go to.
Yeah.
Like, there was only... The longest drive was like a few hours.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But... Being in Arizona and being able to see all that stuff and still being that close to where we could go there and then come back home mm-hmm. at night.
Mm-hmm. Same day.
That was mm-hmm. the same day. That was phenomenal.
And right. some people might think that driving a couple hours to go see something or go do something sounds like a lot. But something I realized, because I had gone to California a couple years ago, out west, everything's spread out.
Yeah.
Like, everything is so spread out. So it's so normal in the west to have to travel at least an hour, 30 yeah. minutes to at least 2 hours to get where you want to go. Mm-hmm. Unlike here, where everything's kind of yeah. it's a little bit closer mm-hmm. together.
Well, if you go up north, especially on the east coast, mm-hmm. the northeast, it's even more, you know, scrunched.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So down south, more spread out. But go west.
Oh, it's mm-hmm. real spread out.
It's yeah. really yeah. spread out.
But you know what? The drive is almost is worth it because, like, the drives there, we saw way more cool stuff than, yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. than I ever would have thought. Just, like, the mountains and, like, the terrain. I'd never seen stuff like that in real life.
Yeah.
And cameras and TV shows and movies just don't capture.
They cannot capture
They
the
just
colors.
Can't.
It was
they
the funniest can't. Thing, like, driving down the road, and you just see, oh my gosh, look at that. This is not the site we're going to, but look at this. This mm-hmm. is really cool. Let's take a picture. Take a picture. Look at the picture. It's not the same.
It's yeah. not the same.
It's yeah. like, oh man, I wish I could capture
we
what
We found
I'm
some
seeing.
Tumbleweeds.
Yes, we did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Tumbleweeds.
Someone yes. said, I forget who it was, but someone said they didn't realize tumbleweeds actually existed.
Yeah.
They thought really? It was, they thought it was a joke, and it was like, no, they're real.
There was one point where Nicholas picked up one of the tumbleweeds, and he tried to like make it roll, but there was just no wind, so it just slapped on the ground yeah. right in front of me with this, like this wet...
That one, there was one site that we saw that had like a huge yeah. tumbleweed. Like it looked like the burning bush. Yeah. Like it was so big.
Yes, it was. I have a picture of it.
Yeah.
Oh, really? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean the landscape, it changes so frequently.
Yeah.
And so quickly. I mean, it's amazing.
It was unreal. We talked about that while we were driving. We were driving along, and for like 30 minutes, maybe 40 minutes, the landscape looked one way, and then we would round a corner, and suddenly it was like you were somewhere
totally
different.
It was like in a different world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, the reason for we chose this is because we wanted our team to go away mm-hmm. to another place. Because what happens is when you are in the same environment, you may be doing great. You may be seeing a lot of success. But your visibility is limited, okay? Your angle is limited. So going away allows you to look at not just problems, but also your existing situation in a whole different way. Hmm. Mm-hmm. And you're able to come back and improve things and see the possibilities.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why I think retreats are such an important part of any organization, church staff, businesses. I mean, you need to take the time to get away.
It also helps us, like, as a team, realize that we're building lives together. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's not enough to say that these are people I work with. But these are people, like, if you truly want to make a difference and if you truly want to be a team that makes a difference, a team that changes things, then you have to be able to do life with them. And staying in that place for an extended period of time where we're actually working and eating and talking all together,
right,
that makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say, last year, which being a very crazy year in the history of the world, everybody knows that, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
2020 is unlike any year in the history of the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
So our team, you guys, okay, you worked above and beyond. You stood strong. You gave everything you had, and you did not complain, and you kept on going. And we are seeing the results, the blessings that have come from your hard work. You sacrifice your time. You sacrifice your family in a way,
mm-hmm.
you know. Many of y'all were here early in the morning, going all the way to 9, 10 o'clock at night in those days, right? Y'all remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So we needed some time to get away, and so I think it was well worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about just for a little bit the reason that we went out? Of course, it was to get away. It was to rest and recharge. But we also, with every retreat or with everything that we do, we also want to bring something back. We also
yes.
want to produce. And we talked about doing a Bible study series. This was actually our second full-fledged Bible studies behind Jonah, which is also coming out pretty soon. But we wanted to talk about Nehemiah. And I remember it was special for me because Nehemiah was one of the first series that I ever heard you preach when I came in 2013. You were talking about he was rebuilding the walls. It was a rise and build. And I remember we sat down and talked about it because we had a completely different way that we wanted to go with the filming. But I remember we sat down and talked a couple of weeks before we left. And he said, what if we just focused on Nehemiah and we focus instead of arise, get up and do something, it's we're rebuilding now. We're having a focus on rebuilding.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, where our nation is today,
mm-hmm.
where churches are today, where our families and individuals and businesses are today, if we're very honest, we are in shambles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we need some direction. We need some leadership to help people rebuild. And rebuilding is very different from going out there and starting something.
Yeah.
Or going out there and, trying to innovate. Rebuilding is when you're putting pieces back together. To not just go back to where things were, but to do better than you've done before.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So rebuilding is very different.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that's where our world is right now.
Yeah. Definitely.
And we'll be in this state for a long time to come. Do you guys agree?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, you've said this before, Dr. Shah, but only time will tell just how much damage was done mentally, emotionally, to the infrastructure of society as a result of everything that we went through and are continuing to deal with.
Yeah, financially, structurally, culturally. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just keep going.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It really is crazy how cyclical everything kind of is in history, because we're looking at Nehemiah and like, wow, how many parallels can we draw from what happened so long ago that compared to what's going on today?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, Nehemiah's account is based on the destruction of the Jewish people or Judah, right? The southern kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon came against Judah in 587 B.C., and destroyed everything and took the people captive. Now, he was already doing that, but he kind of picked up speed and really emptied out Jerusalem and Judah of all the strong, the good, the successful people and took them with him to Babylon. What was left in Jerusalem was just nothing. I mean, really a few commoners. And the only reason I believe he left them was so that the wild animals won't repopulate the land.
Mm-hmm.
So they were not there to rebuild. Yeah. They couldn't do that. They didn't have any money. They didn't have any resources. They didn't have any know-how. Mm-hmm. All of them were gone. And then under Babylonian rule, the Jewish people had to learn to reclaim their identity, to remember who they were, where they came from. And that's the time period of the Daniels and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who grew up in exile and learned how to not just survive, but also thrive. And they climbed the power structure in Babylon. I mean, Daniel became one of three who were the chief rulers in Babylon. And then, as you know, the Babylonian Empire fell to the Persian, the Medo-Persian Empire under Cyrus the Great. And overnight, the Babylonian Empire became the Persian Empire. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Cyrus gave a decree. Very simple. He said, go home. Go back and rebuild your lives. Not just to the Jewish people, but also all the people that the Babylonians had captured and exiled. He said, go home. Rebuild your lives, rebuild your economy, rebuild your temples, just send a tribute back this way, and everything will be fine. Mm-hmm. And many of the Jewish people went back. I mean, thousands, but many never did.
Yeah.
And Nehemiah was one of those who did not. Now, keep in mind, this is generations after, you know, we're talking about 440-some BC, so about 100 and almost 30 years have passed since Daniel's time. I mean, that's a pretty long period. Yeah. Think about it.
And that's the crazy thing to think about Nehemiah, because it's like he wanted to, his whole goal was to go back and rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. And anybody who's just looking at it at face value is like, well, of course he would. He's Jewish. But he didn't know those people. He had never met those people in his entire life.
The walls of Jerusalem.
Like if somebody were to tell you guys, and I mean, some of you have like Irish or Scottish or German roots. Hey, we want you to go back and help rebuild Germany or go back and help build Scotland again. You'd be like,
my home's here.
This is my home.
I have some heritage and I love some, you know, those stickers to put on my car, but other than that, I have no desire to go
back. I'm not trying to rebuild Scotland.
Not only that, but Nehemiah wasn't just like some dude who had never been there, but he was also in a really prominent position.
He had everything. I mean, he had everything that he needed right in front of him, but
right. The Bible calls him a cupbearer, but he was much more than just a butler, okay?
Yeah.
Or a guy who just stood there holding a cup. He was a consultant to the king.
Marliege. Just seen him as like Alfred from Batman.
Yeah.
A very good, your liege.
Yes. Yes. No, he was a consultant. Cupbearers were people who were trusted by the kings. They made sure that the food... made sure that the wine, the drinks, were not poisoned. So it was more than just the food taster. They were the ones who made sure who handled the food, which team took care of this, who was in charge of the security. This is all the kind of things he did. Mm-hmm. And then, some other extra biblical accounts tell us that a cupbearer also was the keeper of the signet, the seal of the kings and the emperors. They were also in charge of the financial records. So when the Bible calls Nehemiah a cupbearer, don't misunderstand that to mean just the guy who protects the king. It's a position.
Mm-hmm. Is there any position in like U.S. government that you would compare Nehemiah to?
I mean, it's hard to tell. But I would put him somewhere like a Secretary of State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a pretty top position.
Much more than just a butler.
Yeah. A little bit more.
Much more than just a butler. I mean, he is advising the president or the king on domestic issues, on foreign policy, on politicians, you know, across the hall, what they're up to and, you know, what's brewing out there and who you need to make an alliance with. I mean, these kind of things that Nehemiah would be up on.
But imagine like the conviction that he must have had to have to go to the king and or like in our modern day example, to go to the president and be like, hey, I need to take like 12 years off or however much time you can give me so I can go heal this like foreign nation that I'm technically part of, but I've never been to. And you probably won't benefit from this at all, but I have to do it.
Right. And keep in mind, he's in Shushan.
Yeah.
Okay. Shushan in Persia, which is modern-day Iran, was the winter palace or winter destination for the kings. Mm-hmm. of Persia. And if you were to, you know, read some archaeological books and things like that, what you'll find is that the palace was so beautiful. And as you would walk through the gates, you would go down this hallway. Both sides are covered in blue enamel tiles, all right? And they're facing the sun, where the sun rises. And on the walls were the images, you know, made out of precious stones of the immortals. Immortals were the Persian guards of the king, the elite force, the Navy SEALs, or the Secret Service, really. And they were made out of these precious stones. So when the sun would rise, not only would this blue enamel tile would be so beautifully shining, or you know, just beautiful, but the precious jewels would come alive. Imagine going to work like that.
I know.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Where are you going to work?
Just imagining, like, going into work every day and seeing something that amazing, walking through the castle and seeing all this stuff, knowing that you work for the guy who's in control of everything, and then being like, yeah, I'm going to go to some city that has no walls, that looks pretty bad, and there's nobody there really ruling it. Let's go there.
Yeah. I mean, there's... I don't find any motivation there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other than God called him to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So one of my favorite things when we were on the staff retreat was sitting together each morning and listening to you lead us through those different sessions of Nehemiah. And it was so impactful to think about Nehemiah and his story that happened so long ago and story that we've had access to in Scripture, but how relevant it was to what we're dealing with today. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to share too much because I know the study's coming out very soon.
Well, it's in the Bible. The
whole that's true. Spoiler alert, it is actually in the Bible.
Dang it, I didn't know that.
Spoiler alert, it is from Nehemiah.
That's right. Can you just give us like a brief picture of what the rebuilding study is about? Why Nehemiah, and what led you to choose that as a book to go through?
Well, bottom line, as we said, you know, this is where we are as a nation, as people, as churches. And we need some kind of a manual that would help us navigate through the shambles that we're all in. Hmm. How can we do that? How can we rebuild? And if you look at Nehemiah's writing, the book of Nehemiah in the Old Testament, he begins by fasting and praying. And then he goes before the king. He takes a risk. Persian kings did not like it if you had a sad face, because now you're messing up my day. Mm-hmm. Or what are you up to? What do you know that I don't know? Mm-hmm. You know, who have you heard talk about some, you know, attempt at a coup or sabotage or assassination? What have you heard? So he goes before the king with a sad face, okay? And
but you said it was several months.
Several months, yeah. 4 months he waited.
Yeah.
Didn't do anything because he was praying. Kind of tells us that if you want to rebuild, take your time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Pray, fast, ask God to give you the vision. Don't just jump right in. So, of course, Nehemiah waited, as you mentioned. But then he goes before the king. He takes a bold risk of asking the king for help. And king gives him permission. And then Nehemiah did not stop there. He actually asks for more resources.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to rebuilding, it's not enough to say, hey, I don't want to, you know, mess up the status quo. Let's just ask what you need and don't ask anymore. Sometimes you have to push.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Because you need a lot more. And Nehemiah did that. And then he comes to Jerusalem and he does not immediately jump in and go and look at the walls. He waits for 3 days, which reminds us the value of resting.
Mm-hmm.
Rebuilding can be exhausting. Nehemiah took the time to rest.
Mm.
And after 3 days, do y'all remember, was it in the morning, evening, afternoon?
It's at night.
At night. Why did he do that at night?
I mean, I think it was because he didn't know who to trust. He didn't want everyone seeing what he was doing. He was trying to keep it under wraps.
Right. Because, you know, when you have a vision, be careful who you share it with.
Mm-hmm.
Share it with the wrong people and they will find a way to sabotage it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, you know, one of the things about rebuilding is knowing when to keep your mouth shut.
Yeah.
And who to talk to. So Nehemiah went at night, and he, you know, surveyed the situation. And then, as you know, word got out that this guy from Persia is here, who has roots down here, but he is not from here. And his purpose here is to rebuild the walls. And immediately the opposition came. And there were three major opposers to Nehemiah. Keep in mind, if you're looking at Jerusalem, on the west side is, you know, at a distance, there is a Mediterranean Sea. North is Samaria. East is Dead Sea and all those, you know, Moab and Ammonites and all this. And to the south is Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
So opposition came from the three places where people lived. So the north, Sanballat the Horonite. To the east, Tobiah the Ammonite. And to the south, Geshem the Arab.
And that's something that just doesn't get talked about. We don't ever, I've never heard in Bible studies or in like just church sermons, external opposition. It's right. Always, it's always trust God, have faith in God, and everything's magically going to turn out okay. Mm-hmm. And we do believe that everything, God's will is going to be done, but that opposition is going to be there. And that's just something that people don't take the time to, like, how to deal with people who are opposing you.
Right.
Not just circumstances, not just sickness or, you know, just these weird, out of control things, but actual people who are right. working against you.
Yeah. And they're outsiders.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have the same mindset as you. And we looked at the parallels as Sanballat representing the world. Tobiah, you know, has a Jewish mm-hmm. name representing the flesh. You know, it's a part of us mm-hmm. that is not godly. And then Geshem representing the devil mm-hmm. and how we still have to deal with the world, the flesh, the devil.
Yep.
Yeah.
And again, we're approaching all this from a Christian perspective.
Yeah.
But you can apply this to your business. You can apply this to your community. But there will be external opposition.
Yeah.
I think it was powerful that when you pointed out that there wasn't that opposition. These three men didn't come against the nation until the rebuilding started.
Right.
They weren't concerned with it when it was in shambles. They weren't concerned with it when it was a mess. But when the rebuilding started, that opposition came in.
Yes.
And that's such a powerful parallel for us.
Right. Well, and it began
we've
with...
We've seen that kind of in stuff going on here at Clearview with, like, some people are actually happy when other people are victimized, where they have nothing to grasp onto, where they're right. not doing well.
Right.
They like that. But the moment right. they start doing well, it's like,
yeah,
that's not okay. And they start trying to get kind you back knowledge. Down to where yeah. you belong, apparently.
Yeah. And it's not just at Clearview. This is a common disease
yeah,
everywhere.
It happens. Mm-hmm. Happens yes. everywhere.
But yeah, we've seen it everywhere. And so Nehemiah knew that this was going to happen, and he knew that these people were going to find ways to stop him. And the first way they did that was by mocking him.
Mm.
So be prepared at people laughing at you when you talk about rebuilding. Oh, you're going to rebuild what? That? There's nothing there. Or it's not going to work. Y'all are crazy. Let me tell you how to do this. So he got mocked.
Yeah.
And that's the enemy's tool against anybody wanting to do what God wants them to do. And so Nehemiah had to overcome that, just like we've had to overcome it. And then internal opposition came where there were major problems in among the people.
Mm-hmm.
And so Nehemiah had to help fix those problems of they were taking advantage of each other. They were holding each other's sons and daughters in slavery because of debt. I mean, how terrible is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he had to overcome that, get people to get things right. And then, as you know, right before they were about to finish the project. By the way, anybody remember how long it took for them to rebuild the walls?
52 days.
52 days. Less than 2 months.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
You know, that tells you when God is with you, he will do some incredible things.
Mm-hmm.
The walls around the city of Jerusalem, the walls standing around the city of Jerusalem today came sometime in the 1600s. You know, they were built by Suleiman the Magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
So don't think those were the Nehemiah's walls. But still,
yeah,
walls around this entire city in only 52 days. Mm-hmm. Being rebuilt by people who did not have experience in building walls and masonry and bricklaying.
Mm-hmm. That's insane. It's taken people like, it's taken the guys over by my street like 3 or 4 months to fix one pothole.
Yeah.
They've had little orange and white roadside containers over there for like, they've had little orange and white road signs over there for like 3 months. Pothole's still there. These guys built a whole wall around a city in 52 days.
52 days. Dang. Common people. Wow. Yeah. Coming together for an uncommon task.
One of my favorite parts in Bible study of what you talked about Nehemiah was, I don't remember which person or what opposition it was, but basically they were calling him like, hey, come meet with us. We want you to come and meet with us, or hey, we think you need to go hide in the temple because this is going to happen. And at these specific oppositions, he didn't try to justify himself. He didn't try to say, okay, I'm not going to do this because of this, or maybe I'll meet with you because of this. No, he was just like, no, I'm not going to entertain you.
Yeah, and by the way, this is towards the finish line.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That these enemies came back and said, meet with us and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And Nehemiah said, go ahead and say it.
He was like, he just said, either, I can't remember if he said no or if he just didn't respond.
Well, he didn't. He said no.
Okay.
Yeah. He said, I'm not coming.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really hard because sometimes we think, oh, you know what? It's great. Let's be friends. And Nehemiah's like, no, mm-hmm. We're not going to be friends.
Yeah.
And doesn't it always happen that way where just at the finish line, because we think as soon as we see the finish line, it's just a mad sprint and it's clear from here on out.
Nope.
But
that's when it gets the hardest.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yes, there is a point to how do you neutralize an enemy, make him your friend. But keep in mind, that's a different enemy than what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Yes, of course, there are people in your life that sort of don't get it. They're not like, you know, with you. But if you explain to them and spend time with them and be with them through some difficult times, hey, they become your best allies.
Mm-hmm.
Not in this situation.
Yeah.
When people have ulterior motives, they cannot be made into allies.
Yeah.
Y'all get that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's quite different when people have different views. Okay, I see what you're doing. All right. We're all benefiting from this. Okay. We're allies. But when people have an ulterior motive, which is, I am doing this and you are disturbing that,
mm-hmm.
You cannot ever make allies out of them.
That was a tough lesson for me to learn. Yeah. That you can't, they're just some people that you can't win.
Yep.
And that took me years.
That's tough. That goes against, you know, kind of how we're raised or how we think, because we're like, hey, everybody deserves a second chance, forgiveness. And yes, there's, just like you've been saying, Dr. Shaw, there's a sense in which God can change a person's heart 100%.
Right.
But you've got to be so careful. You've got to be so wise, because if it's your opposition, if it's your enemy, they're likely going to remain your enemy.
Yeah. There's a difference between forgiving somebody and putting your guard down and letting them back into like your innermost heart.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think Nehemiah made the right call and refused to meet them and refused to take their advice. I mean, they were telling him to go inside the temple and hide.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what God had said? If you do that, you should be taken out and killed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So these people were going to trick Nehemiah into hiding in the temple, and then they would have been the one coming out and saying, look at this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no.
You die.
Yeah. This is the guy that y'all had rebuild the walls?
Yep.
No.
And look what he's done. He has desecrated our holy place.
Yeah.
And they would have taken him out and stoned him to death.
Yep.
Yep.
And he says, nope, not coming. And he finishes the wall.
I also love that throughout all of this, everything that happened from the beginning when he's talking to the king, and then when he goes to start rebuild and he goes at night, everything that happens, he is wise. He is a very smart guy. He's got a high position, but nothing that he does is without prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that really stuck out to me throughout the whole Bible study. It seems like every time he's about to do something, before he talks to the king, he prays. Before he, like when he gets there and he's getting ready to start, he prays. When he feels these people attacking him, he prays. It's not something where he's just like...
Well, he even prays like while he's talking to the king.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Mid-conversation.
And that's something that really stuck out to me was throughout Nehemiah, being able to rebuild and be in that position, it takes prayer. It's not something that you can just do.
Right. And then the wall is completed, but the people are still broken. There's a difference between physically they're protected, but emotionally and spiritually they're still weak. And for that, they needed the Bible. They needed the Word of God. And if you remember, Ezra the scribe, who was sort of a contemporary of Nehemiah, who had helped in reinstituting the temple activities, sacrifices, rituals, and all that. He stood up and read the Bible from early morning till midday. And people in the hot sun stood there, and even children who could understand, and they heard the word of God, and there was a mighty revival that came.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, when we're talking about rebuilding, it's not just talking about putting, you know, blocks and bricks back together. We're talking about building people's lives back together. And there's no other foundation that can do that but the Bible.
That's right.
In fact, this weekend we're talking about that.
Yep.
The authority of the Bible in our lives. And so that's what Nehemiah did.
I just love the way you said it, not only at the retreat, but even here in this podcast, that that Nehemiah and the Bible itself on a grander scale is the manual. It's our manual for rebuilding. Mm. And we're talking about capturing tomorrow. What better example to look at than someone who went out and captured in those short 52 days, captured a nation by God's grace. And I don't know. I just learned a lot. I've always been drawn towards Nehemiah, I think, because that was the first series I ever heard you preach. Right. And it was such a radical shift in preaching that I had heard, but then just through the years going back to it, and even now we've dug deep into it again. There's just always more. I don't know. There's just more to be said, and there's more to hear.
Right, and then at the end of that, Nehemiah even led the people in celebrating what's known as the Festival of Booths. Mm-hmm. Okay, that this is the harvest festival where they would stay in small makeshift booths with their children, you know, made out of limbs and branches, and they would, it's like camping. Mm-hmm. I mean, what a wonderful picture of how things should be when you are rebuilding. You need the time to reconnect with your loved ones. Mm-hmm. I mean, God thought of everything. So if you're rebuilding, don't forget to have fun.
Yeah.
Don't forget to take time to be with your loved ones. And this retreat did that for us, but also
we were surrounded by loved ones.
Yes, you know, hiking and running down the road, vast open roads in Arizona, and taking pictures
of nowhere.
Seeing all the sights and being able to like hang out together and hike, and then lastly, like being able to like go to the stores and shop and like get matching cowboy hats and stuff like that. It was just a good, like a fun experience.
I forgot about the cowboy hat.
Even just spending time, you know, in the van, driving around to different sites and like, okay, this looks like a good place for filming, or working on the filming project together where each of us had a role, a job to accomplish, coming together to make that happen. I mean, it was a time of rest, but it was also a time of just growing together and just cementing the relationships that we have.
Reconnecting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so don't forget to do that. And Nehemiah did it. And then what we do now is we come towards the end of the book, where Nehemiah has gone back after 12 years of giving his life to the people of Judah of Jerusalem, as he had promised to the king of Persia. He goes back. Mm-hmm. And he hadn't been back in Persia for a year that he began to hear that things were going downhill again in Jerusalem and in Judah. And sure enough, he comes back. And what he finds is this. Those old enemies have moved in. Mm. In fact, Tobiah the Ammonite has an office set up inside the temple. Isn't that amazing?
Bro, like...
Just that picture, the enemy, Tobiah the Ammonite, has an office
in the
inside
holy place
of the temple.
The place where they try to get Nehemiah to hide so they could kill him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm going to get you to hide here so we can kill you, but, oh, you're gone? Okay, here's my office.
Right. And Nehemiah came and threw everything out. And you know, what they had done was they had taken the place where the food for the Levites would be kept. Mm-hmm. And they had given it to this guy. And so the Levites had to go back to work. They could not lead in worship. The giving was low. The worship was low. People were working on the Sabbath. Nobody was going to the temple. I mean, it was a horrible situation. And as you know, Nehemiah, I mean, he threw the stuff out.
Yeah.
He threw Tobiah out.
I really like that, because thinking, when you think about people in the Bible, a lot of the times you think they're these soft people who are like, all right, let's all come together.
Going to give a motivational
speech.
Yeah,
we're going to give a motivational
speech.
Come on, gang. And then once I motivate you, then you'll do what I want. It's like, no, this guy threw somebody out of the temple. Just sheer force.
Slapped the people around a little bit.
Oh, he pulled their hair.
Pulled their hair out. Yeah,
Nehemiah said, that's a whooping.
That's a whooping. That's
because they were intermarrying. And again, don't misunderstand what that means. It was not just intermarrying in the sense of marrying people of different color or whatever, but they were intermarrying in the sense of following other gods.
Yeah.
And God had told them, don't do that.
Yeah.
And they did. And Nehemiah, I mean, he was angry. He was kind of a righteous anger.
Yeah.
And he just let the people have it. And then he brought back the Levites. The worship started again. The giving started again. And people started coming to the temple again on the Sabbath.
Hmm.
So the point is this. When it comes to rebuilding, you can never take your hands off the wheel.
Yeah.
Mm.
You can't do that. You cannot say, okay, that's done, and go off. You have to constantly protect and constantly course correct.
Mm.
If not, the walls would go back down again.
Well, I think that if you don't constantly course correct, or you're not giving what you just rebuilt protection, then the people that were causing you trouble are just waiting for you to leave so they can take it, or they can destroy it, or turn people against you or against what you've just rebuilt. Just because it's rebuilt doesn't mean they go away or that they've given up. Like, yeah, some people are relentless.
I guess it's just a good reminder to constantly be vigilant when you're working on a project, especially when it's a project for the kingdom. Like, yes, God is behind you, but that doesn't mean that you can slack off and kind of sit back and force him to do all the work, so to speak. Like, you're supposed to still be protecting the ministry or your work, protecting the kingdom, protecting God's name, so that we're able to then stand strong together as a church family or as a Christian family.
Yeah. Protecting, I think, is the thing that stands out to me the most, and just that constant vigilance on what you are trying to rebuild, whether it's in your personal life, whether it's your family, whether it's church, whether it's your business. I mean, you can't afford to take your hands off the wheel at all, because just like Tobiah, the enemy's going to come in and have a seat in the temple. I mean, they're going to find that opening, and they're going to come in. The people who were your enemies, the people who were your opposition, they're going to come against you at the earliest opportunity. So constantly be protecting, constantly be course correcting on what you're rebuilding.
Yeah. For me, the main things that really stuck out throughout the whole Bible study were, one, it's just the importance of prayer throughout everything that you do. It shouldn't be like, you know, I pray in the mornings and that's my prayer time. It's more like everything that I do is covered by prayer. Mm-hmm. And that's what Nehemiah illustrated. And that's something that really stuck out to me. And the second thing that stuck out to me was along the lines of what you guys are saying about being protecting and being vigilant. It seems like you have to know the time and place, but there is room for like almost a righteous aggression. Like, I'm not gonna be walked over here. This is something that matters. It's something that we're rebuilding. So now I'm gonna stand up and fight back. I'm not just gonna let you do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. And surrounding yourself with other people who are also like-minded and are able to kind of stay the course together, fight the fight together, support each other, defend each other. Because nobody can do something like this on this grand scale by themselves.
I think one thing that really stuck out to me is how much today people want to just go with the flow. People want everything just to be easy and automatic. But what we don't realize is someone is working behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. Someone is shaping this country to what they want it to be. And I think what I've learned from Nehemiah is that it takes people like, and really what from how we've operated in 2020 is it takes people who are willing to stand up and say, no, America is worth rebuilding.
Yep.
It's worth rebuilding. I don't want your new vision for this world. I don't want the things that you say are going to be the new normal that fly in the face of what God has said. So if we feel like, hey, America is worth rebuilding, the church at large is worth rebuilding, then it's going to take that bold action. It's going to take that person who cares enough to stand up and do it. And I think that's kind of where my mind is at as far as Nehemiah goes.
And I mean, it's a ginormous task, just like the Grand Canyon. When you look at it, you go, wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's one reason we did the filming there, because it kind of parallels with rebuilding. It's such a humongous task, and yet we're called to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're called to do it, God will provide the right people, the right resources, the right team, and his protection.
Absolutely. I love that. I love the way Nehemiah's story parallels with what we're dealing with. If you guys have any questions about anything we talked about on the podcast, send us an email to carpemanana@clearviewbc.org. We'd love hearing from you guys. And make sure you stay tuned because we are going to be releasing Dr. Shaw's study through Nehemiah, the one we filmed out in Arizona, as its own Bible study with video lessons and companion guides. So make sure you guys stay tuned for that. Join us next time, same station, same time. And if you're not already, be sure to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. Thanks, guys, and we'll see you next time on Carpe Manana.